You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right, welcome to Freethinker Radio on KPFT 90.1 for the next hour. Glad to have you here. Here with Derek. We've been broadcasting for 10 years. He'll get into some of the other places you can find our work. But I'm glad to be here for the next hour. We're going to talk about a few different news stories. We're going to reflect on them, take some audience participation, and play some music. You know, we've been playing underground music. Music beyond the lamestream for over 10 years now. We're always happy to share more music. So if you want to message us anywhere you can, if you got contact with us or with our Freethinker Radio anywhere, or you can send a email to music@visionarynoise.com. But yeah, I want to mention some shows. Our other co-host Johnny isn't here, and there'll be a show. It's called Free AF. Your imagination can imagine what AF, free as free can be, free as free, free AF number one. So this sounds pretty exciting. And everything's free. They say there's going to be some free, you know, we can't even mention prices here, but free we can mention. The band, the Posers, something else. I know I've seen them before live, El Jumbotron. I saw them about a month ago. Very exciting show. People were getting down, to say the least. Kim Jong Uno, I haven't seen, but that sounds exciting. So yeah, that's going on what is this? This weekend. It's going on Saturday, if you want to get into it. And that kicks off at 6 p.m. So I also saw that out at Acadia, we got a pretty heavy show going on Saturday as well. So yeah, we got a lot of things going on in the Houston area. I'm sure if you didn't know about it, you can find ways to explore it. And if you've got events, you can reach out to us, and we'd like to talk about them as well, and maybe even talk to you about them. How you been, Derek?
I'm doing good, man. Yeah, welcome everybody to Freethinker Radio. As Micah said, we're on KPFT, and we are live on Odyssey. We're live on Rockfin, DLive, all at the Conscious Resistance Network, and we're always happy to do that. I'm doing good, man. I'm excited to be back in Houston pretty soon. We'll be coming back to Texas by next weekend, going to Float Fest. Shout out to Float Fest if anybody's interested in that. Float, FLOTE Fest. It's happening 2 hours away from Houston, so towards Central Texas, but not really that far. And a lot of freedom-minded families, people out there camping. There's going to be some talks, some workshops, some music, all kinds of stuff happening. So check that out. I'm excited to come back for that. And then I'll be in the Houston area for the whole month of May, and we'll get to some of the radio shows in person again. And I'm looking to checking out some Houston music events and just see what's happening in activism. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And I'm also looking forward to an event that's coming in May that we'll be telling you guys more about over the next coming weeks. I actually did have a chance to sit down with the organizers, two of the organizers who are not from Houston originally, but I got to talk to them about what this tour is about. It's called the Crimes Against Humanity Tour. And I don't really even want to give away too much. Unless you got anything else to add, Mike, I would just want to jump into this interview and share, and everybody can find out about this event. I think that our audience will probably be curious at the least, or interested in what these people are trying to put together. All right, okay, let me go ahead and pull this up. This is again with Nash, I believe is the gentleman's name, from the Conscious Global Events Organizing in Houston. They're doing a tour all around the country, so check this out. We'll tell you more about it.
Hey everyone, this is Derek Brose with the Conscious Resistance Network and Freethinker Radio, and this week I wanted to share an exciting event with you guys, and we're going to talk with some of the organizers of this event. It's important to me to share this with my audience, both the audience of Conscious Resistance who listens to my work through the internet, and those who follow Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT in the Houston area, that this is an event that I think everybody in Houston, and even those who are listening outside of Houston, across the U.S., because it's about a tour we're going to be talking about that's coming to many different places in the U.S. But for those in Houston who have questions about a number of different topics we're going to get into, things that are regularly covered here on this radio program, this is going to be an event you want to be involved in, you're going to want to learn more about. So to tell us more about this event, I have Nisha and Nash with Conscious Events Global, who are organizing the Crimes Against the United States Guys, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Derek.
Doing great. Thank you.
Well, yes, thank you for making some time for us this afternoon and for sharing you know, what you have going on with the audience. That's, as I mentioned, is going to be in Houston, but there's going to be people listening from elsewhere as well, so they might be able to come to the event whether they're based in Houston. But let's start with, first of all, a little bit about your company, Conscious Events Global. Could you tell us more about that before we get into the specific event?
So I'll go into it briefly. We started, we went on a journey of discovery in about, I would say, 2008 or 9. And that led to many conferences that we did in terms of attending. In about 2012, we made the decision that we definitely want to start doing this ourselves, and ended up working with David Icke in 2016. So we were responsible for literally starting off his worldwide wake-up tour. We did 8 cities, 5 in Australia and in New Zealand, and then we did 3 cities in the USA in 2016. Strangely enough, when David was on stage in America, he actually spoke about mandatory vaccinations, and he spoke about this pandemic that would need to be created in order to bring in those mandatory vaccinations. Is exactly where we are now in terms of the Crimes Against Humanity tour. He spoke about those vaccinations, and a lot of people looked very shocked. And I was standing right there, and I thought, hey, maybe David's going to be wrong this time, but guess what? He's right.
So you guys have experience then doing events going back at least till to 2016, and now you are planning another tour across the U.S., this time not just with David Icke, but with 4 different speakers from different areas. I think each may be considered an expert in their different fields. Can you tell us more about this specific tour and now what you're working on now?
Okay, so just to correct that, we've been doing events since around 2012. We went major and international in 2016. And yes, Crimes Against Humanity Tour is our contribution to the world in terms of this pandemic and all the actual information and the disinformation that has been going on. The 4 speakers we have, Dr. Rainer Fulmich is from Germany, but he's also a practicing attorney in California. Dr. Fulmich has been working with the Coronavirus Investigative Committee now for the past 2.5 years and has done amazing work in terms of presenting evidence that is otherwise being covered up. We've got Patrick Wood, who's an amazing speaker. He lives in Phoenix. He's been studying the infiltration of governments by an elite few that have been infiltrating governments all over the world. You know, there's a lot of people that would say, how could they stage such a huge global campaign? How could they lock down every country? How could they, at the snap of their fingers, have the whole world just listen? And that has been worked on for the past, I would say, around 30 years. And Patrick Wood has been studying this 45 years from the times of the inception of the Trilateral Commission. So he goes into an amazing amount of history in terms of how these people have managed to actually pull this off. Judy Mikovits needs absolutely no introduction. She's amazing. You know, she was the first that spoke out, I think, very boldly with the pandemic. We had an idea of exactly what was going on, but when we watched that pandemic when it came out, I think it was in 2020, it was absolutely amazing, and to the point where we thought, okay, so everything we thought is now starting to make sense. And from there on, we did a lot of research and ended up meeting a doctor called Richard M. Fleming, who is highly qualified, probably one of the most qualified people out there at the moment. I think he's got 53 years of actual research and experience. He has treated COVID patients, and I think he did about 1,800 of these patients, and with a success rate of 99.83%. He also goes into the protocols in terms of what the WHO has actually recommended as the protocols for COVID, and the fact that that is where our problem has been in terms of people dying of COVID. They're being treated wrongly. So it's a very strong conference. Actually, what it actually is more of a deposition by all the speakers. This is absolute evidence. Everything that is going to be said on our stage is absolute truth and can be proven in a court of law. So we're working on bringing the evidence to the people and also motivating indictments in terms of the people who are actually responsible for this. In fact, the main focus of Crimes Against Humanity Tour is indictments, because this is not going to stop. There's a lot more coming, and we don't want that to get to that stage. We would rather address it now and make sure that the people are aware of exactly what's going on.
Okay, I have a question for either of you, both of you. So the audience that's going to be hearing this, some of them are going to be 100% on board with what you've just said, and you know, very familiar with some of the speakers, Patrick Wood, G. Mikovits, Dr. Fleming, and know their work and pretty much right on board with that. There will also be others who are likely going to stumble across this show who might, have no idea, you know, what any of these topics are really about, or they might think some of the things sound, outlandish or sound too crazy for them to accept. Is this event would somebody who is totally new to this information have a place at this event? You know, do you think they could show up sort of not very familiar with the topics and get an introduction to, you know, what is going on? And as far as, like you said, the attempts to file indictments and just knowing about this whole process, or does somebody need to come in kind of with all this background info already?
You would need too much of research, you know, as a part of the audience, because the speaker's going to deep dive in terms of all the information that they would be presenting. So, no, it wouldn't be necessary to actually have previous knowledge to come to this conference, because whatever you need to know, you would hear it at the conference.
Absolutely. There are so many things that don't make sense. First of all, if this was a real pandemic and they were convinced that it actually is a proper pandemic, you would not have the response that you've had from the media in terms of them being totally behind it. And at the same time, promoting it and promoting vaccines, you know, there are no people falling down in the streets and dying in front of us. I would hate to say something like that, but I would actually have to point that out, that if it was a real pandemic, I haven't seen anyone fall down with COVID. I haven't seen anyone collapse. All of the deaths and all of the problems associated with this seem to be happening in the actual hospitals and in terms of treatments. We have people that have approached us, I mean, thousands of people who speak about their family who had COVID, according to the PCR test, were sent home and then told to stay there and to take mild medication until they get worse. And when they do get worse, they then phone the hospital, go to hospital, their family can't see them. These are often older people, and it's very sad. You know, we've got personal experience with this, where family members have been taken to hospital, and then after maybe a week of treatment, they then get put on this drug, and they get put on a ventilator. And just before that, they were speaking to people on the phone, you know, and straight after, they don't come back home anymore. So that's what we are actually most concerned about, is the fact that there is so much of shadowy stuff about this. So much has come out about the hospitals. I think Project Veritas did an expose in terms of a nurse who was recording in a New York hospital. I think that was last year, where she recorded them speaking about this stuff, you know? So in terms of the actual pandemic itself, there's very little scientific evidence to actually support a pandemic, as it were, in terms of the amounts of deaths and those causes of deaths, because the actual figures have been inflated quite a lot. So we don't even know what we're dealing with in terms of that.
Yeah, this is, you know, a lot of the information that you're just sharing right there, the audience who listens to Freethinker Radio and to my work regularly will be, you know, familiar with this. I did a mini documentary in 2020 about the problems associated with the PCR method called the PCR deception. We've talked about the numbers specifically in Houston and in Texas, the area where the show broadcasts from, the numbers being, you know, misrepresented as far as dying from COVID and with COVID, and also the situations you describe about people going to the hospitals, being put on ventilators and then not coming home, and people being denied access to their own family. That's something as well that we've seen in parts of Mexico as well. When people start to have the information spreading through the community, don't go to the hospital. If you go to the hospital, you're not coming home. Like, we've talked to people as well who've reported these things. So it's the same issue we're seeing around. So I do want to encourage anybody who is hearing this, and this is a little bit new or just, I don't know, maybe it seems implausible for you, to definitely check out the event. Let's talk more about the event for a moment. The website is crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. We talked about some of the speakers. And let's talk about the date. When exactly is this coming to Houston? And where can people find out more about getting tickets to come to the event?
Okay, so the tour is a 9-city tour, and it starts off in Fort Myers on the 23rd of April. It then goes to Los Angeles on the 1st of May, and Chicago on the 8th of May, Phoenix on the 14th of May, and then Houston on the 21st of May. From there, we go to Minneapolis on the 28th of May, Atlantic City on the 4th of June, Dallas on the 11th of June, and then finally Tampa on the 19th of June. And by the way, to correct you at the beginning, the only event that will be live streamed will be Tampa, which is the 19th of June. And the reason we've done that is because a lot of explosive information is going to be discussed at this tour, at these events. And at the same time, what we're doing is we're going to be recording all of them. So after the tour is over, we will then release all the recordings of all the events on our website. In terms of the actual information, I think that even people who have no idea and who do not resonate with what we're saying just at a glance would need to attend this, especially the vaccinated. We've got doctors like Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's speaking about the effects of the vaccines. You know, I think that it's no secret now. We've got, we've got football players in Europe that are falling over. We've got cricket players in India that are falling over. We've got people all around us. We've just lost a personal friend of ours to this, this Pfizer vaccine. She's speaking about the vaccine, and she's also speaking about mitigating the actual side effects of these vaccines. Now, it's very important for people who have been vaccinated. I know, there's a lot of people who have taken the vaccine and are now thinking, hang on, do I now need to take a booster? And how long is this going to go on for? So those people need to come to the conference, especially to speak to people like Judy Mikovits and to hear her speak about the fact that the vaccines can be mitigated if we know that there are actually side effects, and if we know that there's potential for problems with our health in the future, we can do things now to actually mitigate that. So this is not a tour which is only aimed for, I think the media calls us anti-vaxxers. It is actually aimed for the general public, and especially people who have taken the vaccine, because Dr. Richard Fleming also has a protocol in terms of dealing with the side effects of these things. So that's the whole point, is that if someone who walks in here who knows nothing about any of this stuff, we start off with Judy Mikovits, we go to Patrick Wood. It's a journey that we take you on in terms of these speakers and their work. And then you've got Rainer Fulmich, who will come on stage and speak about his work with the coronavirus pandemic, speak about the solutions. Okay, this tour is mainly also focused on solutions. How do we move forward? And like, what do we do? Now that we've got I would call it a political stroke elite force who are doing whatever they're doing, how do we deal with that? What do we do now? Some people talk about common law, and some people talk about many things, but Rainer has actually done all of this stuff. He has researched a lot of it. He is already setting up these systems in Germany. So there are solutions. We don't have to comply in terms of these things. Even the American Constitution does not have provision for these mandatory vaccines and these mandates. So even these movements that are called defeat the mandates should be saying, well, these mandates are actually illegal. So as people, we don't know our actual rights. Our sovereignty is being trampled upon. And that's because we have become a very complacent generation. If you look at the forefathers, the actual founding fathers of the United States of America, which we love, they did a lot of work. And we need to do work right now and to try and figure out where we're going with humanity. At the moment, I think that we can move forward as a generation just with knowledge and just with revealing in terms of looking at the actual evidence and doing something about it.
I 100% agree with that. And I want to say that I appreciate that you said that, you know, the event is two things, that it's about solutions, which is what we.
All right. Welcome back to Freethinker Radio. My name is Derek Rose. I'm here with Micah Jackson. And that was an interview that I just performed recently with the founders of Conscious Global Events, who are organizing the Crimes Against Humanity tour, as you just heard, coming to Houston on May 21st. We'll have another interview with one of the speakers, Patrick Wood, in a couple of weeks as we get closer. But yeah, just got to catch up with them. And as you could tell, they got some, you know, a lot of information to share. And I tried to ask some balanced questions for those who might be hearing, whether on the internet or on KPFT, who are skeptical of the information presented, or maybe even, you know, vehemently disagree. So it seems, I don't know, I think it'll be an interesting event for people who choose to attend. What do you think, Micah?
I think everything you said was valid. One of the other things I'd like to bring to it here is that that they said, you know, they're talking about instances where you don't have to comply, these situations where people just go along because they don't know any better. I was glad to hear them speak to that. Because I think when something's so much in your face as some of the wrongs that we have to experience in the world, that it's really easy to get caught up in things that you might be against and think that they have more power because you spend a lot of time focused on them rather than, you know, just kind of moving forward and being free and going, oh, I don't have to do that. I don't have to comply. I don't, you know. But it was really good to hear them speak about that. And it sounds like some of the other speakers at the event will have a lot of information. It'll be informationally driven, no matter how you feel about the conclusions that some thinkers may have there. It does sound like it's informationally driven. So that ought to be informative, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. And at least myself and maybe a couple of us from Freethinker Radio will be there, and we'll try to get some more interviews and maybe some clips of people there and ask the people why they feel like it's important, or maybe why they disagree, or what, you know, what their thoughts are in general. Of course, we'll share that here on Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston and on the Conscious Resistance. So we're going to go to a quick music break and come back. We're going to talk InfoWars is apparently filing for bankruptcy. Got a Julian Assange update. I really want to get to this pandemic treaty story, some talk of the Federal Reserve, and an update on Ukraine, as well as more music. So stay tuned, guys. We're going to hear a song called The System from Beast 1333, a hip-hop artist. So check this out. This is called The System, Freethinker Radio. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
Y'all told us about the twin towers wasn't even true. Ritualistic mass murder, deception, it ain't new. Cause the goal of the system is making a slave of you or the material. Things don't matter, they unfulfilling. What we really need to get to the root of what they concealing. They oppress us, suppress us, repress us like they possess us. Promise of progress and promising changes when they address us in our faces. So blatant, surrounded by their symbology. They shape the whole system and cultural anthropology. So bet your last that it sucks, not successful success. For my struggling people, the world stressful. The best thing that we can do is learn to think together. Since this rent for numbers, I suggest we interlink together. Cause our system that is brown, let us down. You're not a snake's estate. Someone had to step up and say it. It's time to set them straight.
All right, welcome back to Freethinker Radio. Yeah, what'd you think about that?
That was good. I liked it. I'm going to be listening to it in the office tomorrow. Beast 1333. Love discovering new music on KPFT and sharing new good music on KPFT. I cannot understate the importance of both discovering, sharing, creating music and art in times like this that can speak truth to power, can speak about empowerment, you know, can speak about oppression, can speak about so many different things, can just shut up and present a smooth vibe for you to feel. So it's just so much that we need. So KPFT's been there. There's lots of shows to check out. I know Sweet Nightmares and others, but thanks for bringing that one, Derek. And like I said earlier, if you've got music, you know musicians, get them in touch with us because we want to keep sharing more new music. And I guess you could call it, and I hate to use the word conscious, some music that speaks to something. Give us the good stuff, you know, filter it for us because we're out here discovering everything and mining it.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean about like not wanting to necessarily label it conscious or truth or things like that, although that's obviously it has more of a message to it. But yeah, send us the music. So let's go ahead. We got a couple of news stories we want to cover. And let's start with this one, which is a little interesting. You found this about InfoWars this week. InfoWars, of course, Alex Jones's media empire. Let's jump in this one. I'm going to start with the Associated Press. Judge delays Alex Jones' trial as InfoWars sinks bankruptcy.
Yeah, let's get into this a little bit. This one, I thought there were some interesting implications here. Turns out a Texas judge just pushed back the first jury trial over how much conspiracy theorist, and you know these words are put in there. You can think what you want. Alex Jones should pay the families of Sandy Hook victims after his InfoWars company sought bankruptcy protection this week. The delay ordered by State District Judge Maya Guerrero Gamble comes days after InfoWars and two other companies tied to Jones filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in Texas. Jones has lost defamation lawsuits in Texas and Connecticut over his comments that the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary massacre was a hoax. The first trial over how he should pay the families has been scheduled to begin Monday in Austin, where InfoWars is headquartered. A new trial has not been set. A judge in Connecticut also paused all proceedings surrounding defamation lawsuits against Jones in that state after the bankruptcy filing. Attorneys for Sandy Hook families have accused Jones of trying to hide millions of dollars in assets. Creditors listed in InfoWars bankruptcy filing include relatives of some of the 20 children and six educators killed in the 2012 school massacre. So, you know, there's one of the stories about this, you know, and you know, I think Alex Jones, no matter what you may think about him, it's fair that everybody could say that he's a controversial figure, right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty plain to say. And I don't know. I said, did you want to look at the other one too before we make a comment on it? I know you had two of them pulled up.
Yeah, I don't know if you think much about that. If you just want to move on into the next one, I'm fine with moving on into the next one and then just, you know, wrap talk about it.
Yeah, here, I'll pull the other one up real quick.
Yeah, and the other one we have here is from the National Review, and we like to make sure we let you know these sources because this has always been, you know, a news analysis and sometimes actual journalism show. Both Derek and I have done interviews. We've done reporting from things. So we like to bring that to it, but we also, you know, we have a lot of other sources of information, and we think that analyzing what is put out there by other sources is important. You know, I mean, that's a big part. If you're not all for censorship, you have to recognize the analysis of this information is really important, because otherwise, what are you going to do? Just blindly believe everything spoon fed to you, you know? But yeah, anyway, so let's get on with the story here. Turns out that, as we said before, the Jones Company, and they add their story here, you know, far right website InfoWars, have filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Same thing, defamation of the character. And they go ahead and name some of the stuff here: InfoWars, InfoWars Health, and Prison Planet TV. Kind of some interesting names, right? All filed for bankruptcy in the Southern District of Texas. The move will allow the companies to remain operational while they devise a plan to reorganize. But the bankruptcy proceedings also pay a pause on any pending civil litigation. Jones is facing several defamation lawsuits over his comments and, you know, from saying it was a hoax and staged by crisis actors to gain opposition to the Second Amendment. Relatives of the victims of the shooting say they have been subjected to harassment and death threats from Jones's followers. So I'm not sure, you know, they created this whole Jones's followers thing here. Judges found the radio host liable for damages in three defamation cases brought by families of Sandy Hook. While Jones offered to settle the lawsuits by paying $120,000 to each plaintiff, families turned down the proposal in court documents, saying the so-called offer is transparent and desperate attempt by Jones to escape a public reckoning under oath with his deceitful, profit-driven campaign against the plaintiffs and their memory of loved ones lost at Sandy Hook. Now a trial to determine how much he should pay the families is set to begin in August. Jones has said since that he believes the massacre did occur. InfoWars listed its estimates to be between $0 and $50,000, and it estimated liabilities in the range of $1 million to $10 million. So, I think we should just talk about it a little bit, Derek. I mean, what are some of your thoughts about the whole thing?
My thoughts are more in the line of, you know, I want to be careful with what I say, because obviously this is an issue that, in a way that I think people maybe still haven't fully grasped, that has been really maligned and censored. And really, this was an extreme example of showing that people who question events, and maybe even question events to the point of questioning whether they happened at all or whether they happened the way we're told, which I think is a reasonable thing to do in a lot of situations, to ask, like, hey, are we being told the full story? And, you know, it can be all kinds of events. And sometimes those questions lead to a bigger truth, right? Sometimes it could be paranoia. But in general, the freedom to ask those questions is something that has been protected for a long time. And it seems like in this case of Sandy Hook, Alex Jones saying whatever he wanted to say, that I mean, if you really follow the story of how they went after Alex Jones, but not only Alex Jones, but other people who were asking various questions about Sandy Hook, some, I think, reasonable questions, were really pursued and sued in a way that we hadn't seen before. And maybe it's just because, you know, the shooting of these kids, as we're told it happened, is, you know, unprecedented of kids being shot at a school shooting, et cetera. But at the same time, I remember when it happened, different questions that were being posed in the beginning, some that I think are still legitimate that were never answered. And then I remember how quickly, like, people made documentaries about Sandy Hook and some of these questions that people such as Alex Jones, but many more people besides Alex Jones, had been presenting years ago, back in 2012, so 10 years ago, right? And there's a documentary, for example, it's called We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook, that I think is interesting, and it's been pretty much removed all over most of the internet. You know, you can find it on some of the alternative video websites, but largely has been kind of a memory hold, if you will. So I think that, does that mean it's true or everything in there is, you know, 100% correct? I wouldn't, you know, place that bet. But I do think there are situations like this where questions need to be asked. And instead we're seeing, people like Alex Jones being, I don't know, almost used as a pawn to show, like, this is what happens if you question something. And even, you know, obviously questioning to the point of saying didn't happen, when children are involved or when anybody's involved, it's sort of like a ugly thing for some people. They're just like, that's despicable. How dare you say that or question that or even, you know, think that. So I could see why some people might have that visceral reaction. But overall, I think it's a dangerous step towards being able to use the courts to silence people who are asking questions.
Yes, definitely. You know, they find him guilty of defamation, and whether that's true or not is beyond the scope of this reflection for now. But then afterwards, you know, you go on and you've got the civil suit whereby, you know, they're going to seek damages for said defamation. And how do you assign a dollar amount to that? And where does it end? I mean, I'm pretty sure if you open the door for untruths being basically just spit in the public arena, there'd be a number of rappers and movie stars and all kinds of people being sued for defamation. So, you know, in that situation, I'm not sure that it's just, you know, the saying an untruth, like, you know, and you know, I don't know enough about Alex Jones. You know, I know that about 10 years ago, he did some investigative journalism, or what appeared to be it, that other people hadn't done. He started addressing some questions that other people hadn't addressed. And he also had, you know, many different diverse individuals that would appear on his show and be interviewed and such. So he was a source of information for a while, a source of something outside the lamestream early on the internet, you know. And, you know, there's all kinds of questions about, like, how he gets all his information and also where he's leading it. And then there was this thing with a turn with him about 10 years back or 5 years, 8 years back, where he became even more radicalized and such. So that's just my view on it. And I totally do agree with you about the concern for it, because, you know, let's take anybody who's saying something out there nowadays. I mean, I guess people are going to say it's the extent that he was a journalist. Now, the whole time they're sitting there telling us he's not a journalist. So, you know, what do you say? What do you post about on Facebook? Have you ever said that something couldn't be the case or something, taking an extreme view on something? I don't know. I mean, where do they draw the line on someone being able to sue an individual or a company for defamation? I guess that's where it goes. And that's what this is, the universal in this one.
One final thing on that, I'll just add to that, just is that imagine this situation somehow kind of being spun out to applying to people who have had questions about COVID over the last 2 years. You know, now I'm not just saying people who say, like, oh, nothing exists, there's no viruses, nobody's been killed, et cetera. And there's probably, you know, there are people out there like that that take that position. But I mean, just in general, imagine just the people who've asked questions like, hey, doesn't the PCR test have these issues? Or, hey, maybe the lockdowns don't work, or the masks aren't the best idea, or what have you, right? And imagine in those situations, even just saying that, other people saying, do you know I have family members that died? I'm going to sue you for, you know, lying about this thing that I know happened to my family. Things like that, right? Like, I could just see it being applied in other ways. But let's go ahead and jump forward to, I know I got a story and you got one that you want to get into. I want to get to this pandemic treaty that we've been kind of addressing briefly the last couple of months. We first touched on it in December. And as I said last week, when we were trying to get to it, it's become an increasingly popular story in the independent media. People are asking questions about this so-called pandemic treaty. And I wanted to read a couple of articles. One is mainstream, one is more independent media. One thing I will mention is that, excuse me, just this past week, there was a public comment period that was not heavily publicized, as these things tend to be, that was where the public could submit comments to the World Health Organization to say, what should the pandemic treaty look like? And it was interesting because it was framed just like that. It wasn't framed about whether or not the countries like the United States and other countries should sign on to the pandemic treaty, but it was, what should it look like? What should the end result of it be? So it was sort of already up, already under the assumption that it was going to happen. And they are planning to have a meeting, I think, by 2023, 2024. So this is definitely a several years plan, but it does involve getting dozens of nations around the world to sign a treaty that people are increasingly concerned is kind of ceding, another area of ceding national sovereignty and national decision-making, like nation-making, the people having a vote, a say, et cetera, instead of going to supranational, international bodies like the United Nations. So let's check this one out. This is from the Telegraph in the UK. Real risk. Now, this is interesting because this is a kind of an argument being put out by the Telegraph and their global health security correspondent that is more sympathetic to the treaty itself than you'll see in the second article. The second article is very much like, this thing is dangerous. So just to give you both those perspectives, as Micah said, we like to do. So the Telegraph says there's a real risk the pandemic treaty could be too watered down to stop new outbreaks. So it's kind of a call for giving it more power, more strength. Experts call for an independent body to publicly assess, rebuke, and praise pandemic preparedness as part of any new treaty. And it says prolonged negotiations over a pandemic treaty could result in a document that's, quote, too watered down to stop future outbreaks in their tracks, experts have warned. Last December, the World Health Assembly, which is part of the World Health Organization's decision-making body, agreed to start discussions to hash out a new agreement aimed at strengthening pandemic prevention, preparedness, and response. The first phase of this process began on Tuesday. This is, again, about a week or two ago, and a set of public hearings to debate how a pandemic treaty might work. Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, said he hoped it would result in a, quote, generational agreement that is a game changer for global health security. That goes on to say, but there are fears that the outcome, which is not due to be presented to the World Health Assembly until 2024, could emerge from years of fraught negotiations without any teeth amid significant geopolitical tensions, especially as COVID-19 slips down the priority list. And they got a quote from a woman from the Panel for Global Public Health Convention, said, as if this goes along in a complex, difficult negotiations, there are real concerns that the treaty might get too watered down to make any sense. Our biggest fear is if it's too easy to think that accountability doesn't matter. And so it goes on from there, and they kind of start to describe it. But that's pretty much the point of this article here, is taking that stance that, like, maybe if they don't try hard enough, then the treaty might get signed, but it won't end up doing anything. And the next pandemic, the one that we're all being told is coming, the one that Bill Gates just wrote about, the one that Dr. Tedros, the head of the World Health Organization, recently just posted a picture of himself with Bill Gates' book. They're saying that next pandemic, well, if this treaty isn't signed quick enough or with strong enough agreements, then we might end up with a watered down agreement that can't protect us from the next one. So one more on this, Micah, and then I'd love to get your thoughts on this, because like I said, this is becoming more and more of a concern to people who are watching what's going on and the results of COVID-19 and power grabs and things of that sort. This is from Off Guardian. Pandemic treaty will hand the World Health Organization the keys to global government. Suggested clauses would incentivize reporting pandemics and see nations punished for non-compliance. The first public hearings on the proposed pandemic treaty are closed, with the next round due to start in mid-June. We've been trying to keep this issue on our front page because the mainstream is keen to ignore it. And it says, let's go on here. It says, the signs are that what scant press coverage there is that are mostly blah, 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 be focused on making the treaty strong enough. As I was just saying, they're kind of pointing out the same thing, that this UK Telegraph article is saying it needs to be stronger, and how this woman saying, if we're not careful, it's going to get watered down. Then they talk about another article published by the London School of Economics, which says the same thing. We need more accountability. We need compliance. Almost the exact same statement. For this treaty to have teeth, the organization that governs it needs to have power, either political or legal, to enforce compliance. And this echoes a United Nations report from May 2021, which called for more powers from the World Health Organization. The UN report said, quote, in its current form, the WHO doesn't possess such powers to move on with the treaty. WHO therefore needs to be empowered financially and politically. And it recommends the involvement of non-state actors such as the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, International Labor Organization, and suggests the treaty offer financial incentives for the early reporting of health emergencies. So think about that. It's like, we're going to give you money if you're the first nation to tell us about a potential pandemic or something coming. I mean, it seems like incentivizing, I don't know, all kinds of scary things. They also raise the questions of countries being punished for non-compliance. This is, again, the UN says the treaty should possess an adaptable incentive regime, including sanctions such as public reprimands, economic sanctions, or denial of benefits. And to translate this to English, if you report disease outbreaks in a timely manner, you get financial resources to deal with them. If you don't report disease outbreaks or don't follow the WHO's directions, you will lose on international aid and face trade embargoes and potentially sanctions. So it goes on from there. But this is, like I said, I think a beginning of a larger conversation we need to be having. And hopefully we will continue to have here on Freethinker Radio as we get more information about this so-called pandemic treaty. This is being debated by some of the biggest nations in the world. They're trying to figure out what it's going to mean. And again, if there is a next pandemic that we're told about, they all can take sort of unified global international action in their nations without much say from the people. At least that's my take on it. What do you think, Micah?
I think that's pretty much it. But in addition to that, I got a couple of questions I think are kind of relevant. First off, this little last thing you were talking about kind of hit me a little bit, where it asks or it says that the nations that will report will get incentivized. And I noticed that you had some issues with that too. I think one of the problems here also is the nation, on the flip side of it, the nations who are not early reporters may be penalized. And this sounds kind of like some old school colonialism in a way, if you think about it. If this is going to be a world organization and all that, they're all assuming it's going to happen. So let's just go ahead and play that game for a minute. They're all assuming it's going to happen. But in their very structure of it, that they're worried will be too soft, by the way, they are saying the nations that are slower to report. If there's a real pandemic, okay, because that's what this is supposed to be all about, right? There's a pandemic. And how the world responds to it. I'm really troubled by the weakest and the poorest nations in knowing about dealing with disease and understanding it. Or let's go the other route, because you know earlier I was talking about focusing on the illness rather than the health. You know, people that understand health, maybe some nations understand health better. You know, obviously the United States has an obesity problem, but nonetheless, the point here is, why would we want to, if it's about health and helping a pandemic not spread worldwide, why would a global governance body, when you think, what is proper role of government? If people have decided that health or the fighting of disease is it, why would they accept the disproportionate allotment of resources only because a country was slow to react? This sounds horrible. I mean, I imagine that it would take Afghanistan a lot more time to figure out what percentage had a complicated disease, you know, than it might take England or, you know, Germany or the United States or Canada. It might take Sudan longer to report an X percentage or to be even able to have whatever equipment it would have. And that assumes that everyone's open and believing that this is a concern in that country. And then you've got the problem of ways countries are governed. Some countries are governed in such a way that they would be deliberately slow to report the information. And so what? We're going to punish their people yet again. So I know there's a lot more to it than that, but you see just that one little sliver, how many minutes it took me to even try to articulate some of the concerns with it. This is what we're talking about. And how many people are talking about it? I doubt very many. We have to be able to talk about it, because do you think it's a treaty of the people and what the people think of we should all agree on in a pandemic? Or do you think it's a treaty about like power brokers and and banksters and people that want power in dimensions that they've never had it before?
Yeah, I think the answer is clear. Well, let's continue, guys. We're down to the last 10 minutes or less here on Freethinker Radio. We do this every week on 90.1 KPFT Houston. As Micah said earlier, if you want to support Houston's only community radio station, go to kpft.org. Let's hit your Federal Reserve story, Micah, and then I'm going to jump into the latest on Julian Assange. But I got this one pulled up here for you.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I totally forgot about the Federal Reserve story. Yeah, check it out. I only wanted to hit this because oftentimes we'll discuss some sort of alphabet soup or authoritarian agency or whatever you might want to call them that is a bit corrupt or we'll recognize that, you know, there's abuse going on, abuse of power in different ways. And we've been doing that for a decade. And sometimes it gets a bit, you know, routine. But I think it's important because people, a lot of people forget and they trust in the institutions and they forget about the people inside the institutions and they forget about the actual institutional, I guess you could call it, malady that goes on. So it turns out the Federal Reserve has banned six former bank employees from the industry, basically for CARES Act fraud. Never mind that the whole banking system is where people will even go to get, you know, one of those PPP loans or whatever. So the bank's got a lot just by playing. So, you know, maybe this is like them throwing some really bad actors, lower level bad actors trying to scam to the wolves, you know, like, oh, these guys are the bad guys. Never mind that we got all this extra money and run the banking system. Federal Reserve is moving to punish bank employees who fraudulently received money under government pandemic relief programs. The Fed has prohibited six former bank employees from future bank employment. This is a, you know, this just was announced this week. Four of the individuals are employees of Regions Bank and two are employees of Bank of America's Merrill Lynch Management. Turns out under CARES Act, qualified small businesses were able to receive certain loans and grants administered by the Small Business Administration to mitigate the effects of COVID-19. And these people basically received such funds and used them for unauthorized personal expenses. So, yeah, you know, meanwhile, the Fed, you know, is going to be increasing interest rates, inflation's going crazy, that sort of stuff. But I thought I'd just show that in addition to, you know, the crooked banksters that we dealt with in 2008 and that some of them are still there that we could, you know, go through a list naming names of TARP recipients, that you got these little crooks in there, you know, working as well. So just wanted to point that little aspect out.
Don't forget about the little crooks. I do think that's important to point out some of these stories that might not always get people's attention or make the headlines, but they are worth noting as well. Criminals come in all kinds of levels.
I mean, those guys work right there at the bank and they're like, oh, gee whiz, I got an idea.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump forward. I wanted to make some time.
Can I say one last thing?
Yeah,
I want to say one last thing before we get into something else. And it's probably a step back, but you know, we've been talking about Lena Hidalgo, the indictments, the funding, that sort of thing. I just wanted to kind of, if anybody's been paying attention to this show regularly, I wanted to kind of draw a parallel between that and the global pandemic treaty and think about, you know, how many more little spinoffs of spending a few million dollars here and a few million dollars would be done on a global scale. So sorry, but yeah.
All right. Well, let me go ahead and pull up this next one. This next story is about Julian Assange. We've been covering Julian Assange's life, I guess, his work with WikiLeaks since back in 2010, 11, when we first started the show, when these, what was it, the Afghan files at that time, Micah, and the collateral damage video that was leaked by Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning. I mean, we've been talking about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks for over a decade. And of course, he's been being pursued by the U.S. government since that time during the Obama administration and then through the Trump administration and then now into the Biden administration. Well, a judge has now approved Julian Assange's extradition to the United States as WikiLeaks founder faces spying charges. This was reported on April 20th, just this week. A British judge on Wednesday formally approved the extradition of Julian Assange to the U.S. to face spying charges. The case will now go to Britain's Interior Minister for a decision, though the WikiLeaks founder still has some legal avenues. The order, which brings an end to years-long extradition battle closer, comes after the UK Supreme Court refused Assange permission last month to appeal a lower court's ruling that he could be extradited. So the UK Supreme Court not coming to his his aide. And a district judge, Paul Goldspring, issued the order in a brief hearing at Westminster Magistrates Court as Assange watched by video link from Belmarsh Prison, and his supporters rallied outside the courtroom demanding he be freed. So now Home Secretary Preeti Patel will decide whether to grant the extradition. So, and if that happens, of course, he will be tried, maybe even attempted to be put away for life or to death in the United States, because they've been going after him for years, over a decade now. And he's been essentially being held prisoner for 8+ years now, first in the Ecuadorian embassy, and then now in Belmarsh Prison, which is one of the worst prisons in the UK. And yeah, so, I mean, the saga continues, and they are, that's why it's partly why today's show, I decided to call it, is press freedom, does press freedom still exist? Not only just because of the Assange story. I mean, we can go back to the interview we did earlier today with the people from the Crimes Against Humanity tour, and how some of those topics, some people might want to be silenced, right? And some of the things that we've been covering about the pandemic treaty, about COVID, and things about Ukraine, maybe even the Federal Reserve, you know, that you're not supposed to talk about, right? Or you're supposed to have a certain viewpoint on. And WikiLeaks did destroy that by destroying, I think, a lot of people's false beliefs if they had of the United States government and what the war on terror really was about, just proving that it was murderous and it was violent and it was lies, etc., and many more things, right? So I think that they did an important service in going after Assange, whether you like Assange or not, whether you think he's a double agent, whatever it is, the point is that it's not good for press freedom.
No doubt. And I think that it has been a theme throughout the show. I mean, we had the articles about Alex Jones and such running that same vein. And the question and the whole discussion about news analysis and its importance, I mean, because that's the thing, right? If we have press freedom, we have to be able to hear what they are saying and form our own opinions, do the research, find out what's viable. I don't know where it got into this whole point that it could even be refined into a truth that clearly.
Yeah, I agree. Well, guys, we're down to the wire here again on Freethinker Radio. We're going to end today with Ganesha's song, Imaginary Person. But thanks to everybody who's listened always to what we have to share. We really appreciate it. You can find the archives to our show at thehoustonfreethinkers.com, including the links to all the articles that Micah and I covered. We'll put the links to the music as well. And anything else you want to share with the audience, Micah, before we get out of here?
Well, just be for something and be for yourself and your loved ones, man, because all this other stuff can be quite a distraction. Just, you know, be empowered. Remember, you're beautiful, you're powerful, you're free.
Peace, guys. Stay tuned. We'll see you next week.